And we're at the top of the hour. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to CCNA Discovery 1, Chapter 5, Part 2, with Ian J on behalf of the Cisco Academy for the Vision Impaired. How are you going, Magic J?
Oh, if I was any better, I'd have to be twins and the world couldn't stand that.
It'd be akin to having me twins and the world couldn't stand that one either. So just as well, there's only one of us on each side of the Pacific. And thank goodness for Kevy and thank goodness for the world, I reckon. Hiya, Mario. How are you doing? You've just joined us. Oh, dearie me, no audio, Mario. Now's not the time to fiddle either. Yeah,
okay. No chat either. You may open up your chat window.
Come up with your chat, yeah. But you've got no audio. And your audio has gone nice and loud too, Jay. That's absolutely fantastic. All right, well, as I said, this is part two. I think I said part two. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to part two of chapter five. I hope I said part two. Because last week we spent quite a little bit of time, as people may remember, talking about binary and how to convert from decimal to binary and back the other way. I think Jackie did an excellent job of explaining that and took some of the mystery out of it for people. Other things we covered was a little bit of DHCP. What else did we do? How IP addresses are obtained, IP addresses and default subnet masks, and I'm sure, and with the quality of work that's coming in and the exams that are happening and everything like that, I'm sure everyone's having a great time reading the text. Are there any questions?
Seriously?
Are you going to be covering subnetting?
Well, we've discussed it. We're probably not much more. We were talking about doing a advanced lecture. We're not sure whether we're up for that at the moment. It's not... What do you think, Jay? I mean, say it's not really that... It's not covered as to the extent in this course as it is in other courses.
Well, I'm up for whatever input the students have on the subject, but to be quite honest with you, there really aren't any, I don't believe there are any exam questions on it, per se, etc. So...
The jury's still out,
you know,
is the official
look,
answer.
My object is not to make this course more complicated than it needs to be, because we're already introducing a lot of complex concepts, and we're going to be fixing to get into the OSI model and that kind of thing here in the near future. And you know, I don't want to overwhelm people, and I agree. In the past subnetting has been taught and taught quite extensively, and that's good, but I guess I just have a question in my mind, since it's not really taught that much in the curriculum, whether in fact we'll be doing that. But I'm certainly, for my part, I'm open to input from students to know what they think. So
well,
now is your chance
not
to
necessary.
Speak up. Let us
know. It's not necessary.
Well, we'll see how things go over the next few weeks. We do have that other course that we need to finish, and there's a lot on everyone's plate at the moment. All right. Are there any other questions about the curriculum covered thus far?
That's all good here.
Excellent. All good across the Tasman, is it? Excellent. All right. I reckon we're just about ready to launch into 5.4. We'll do some binary exercises after we've done this. So Jackie will help us with that, and you never know, today you might even get out a little bit early, because we're supposed to keep you for 2 hours, but you know, we're up for breaking rules today, and I think you guys have worked pretty hard over the last 5 or 6 weeks. If you wander off a bit earlier today, it's not going to be the end of the world.
And it probably won't kill anybody either.
Well, there you go, how about that? It's a bonus. All right, because I think you've all worked very hard, and I really reckon you need to be all proud of yourselves, because you've done it. You've done it well. You've done it, and you've done it well. All right, folks, 5.4, which is almost to the end of the notes. We actually did better than we thought last week when it came to covering the material, as far as you know what we got done. Okay, address management and network boundaries and address space. And in advanced subnetting, we actually do talk about boundaries and block sizes and stuff, but in this context, We say that routers provide a gateway through which computers can communicate with hosts on different networks. And remember, we discussed the differences between switches and routers the other week. Each interface on a router is connected to a separate network. Okay, it's a bit of a revelation here. The IP address assigned to that interface really identifies which local network is connected directly to your router. So basically, you know, we talk about the default gateway, and it's the IP address of the near side interface of the nearest router.
So basically, yeah, let's define near side interface a little bit, let's at least, because I'm not sure that's always a concept I had trouble with, and since it is, I'm suspecting they might also. So maybe we should discuss what near and far side interface is.
Certainly can. Well, basically, in a nutshell, would I be correct in saying that the near side interface of the router is basically the part of the router that's connected to your network, the nearest to you, as opposed to the what goes on the other side of the router. Like in the case of an integrated services router, your internal network is connected to the near side interface of your integrated services router. The far side of your integrated services router is connected to the big bad nasty internet.
Yeah, and think of the, like if you're using DSL, think of the phone jack part going out of the router as being your far side interface, and for the cable, you know, think of that, you know, part that connects to the cable modem as being the far side, if that helps. Sometimes we also call it the WAN side, if that's helpful.
Yeah, let's look at, say, Gary. We'll pick on Gary because he's good to pick on. Gary J, he's got a router with a WAN port on it, and connected to his WAN port is his surfboard modem, the Motorola one, which is his cable modem. With the DSL ones, obviously, as Jackie said, is the phone cable that goes out to ADSL. Any questions?
So would that equate to the difference between an address that's private and an address that the internet or the public might see?
Absolutely.
It could,
yeah. These people really are getting this networking stuff, aren't they, Jay? Yeah, well, exactly, because the private addresses, and we'll cover that, I've read through the notes before, but there are non-routable addresses are private addresses on your home network, you know, like your 192.168.0s, etc. They are addresses that should not be seen on the internet. On the far side of the integrated router is the IP address assigned to you by your internet service provider, and is your address that everybody can see. Okay, with the router interface that's connected to your network, it is often referred to as the default gateway address. And if you do an IP config, you'll see it on about the third line. Okay, this default gateway address can be configured manually on a host or can be assigned to a host by means of DHCP. You have to have it, or else if you don't, you're not going to find your way outside, or, you know, to the router and outside to the internet. Or in a big company, you're not going to find your way to another network if you're dealing with, you know, other networks, subnets, etc. Basically, when the DHCP is configured properly on your ISR, it gives out the default gateway address along with the subnet mask and IP address for the hosts that are connecting to it. In this manner, all hosts
test
on the network
alert. Test alert.
It's been a little while since I read the test for Chapter 5, so, and I know Kylie's done it, so anyone who thinks they've got a test alert, sing out. Okay, so all hosts on the network can use that IP address, or the default gateway address, to forward out through the to hosts outside of the network, a la hosts on the internet or on another network. These devices, these integrated services routers, the ones you'll unpack from Kmart or wherever, or Harvey Norman or Walmart or whatever it is, are usually by default set to be DHCP servers. And that means that your average person can just basically get one out of the box, plug it in, and, you know, with a minimum of fuss, get everything running. Basically, it's a bit of repetition here in the notes. Basically, when it's configured as a DHCP server, it will, as I said to you before, provide its own IP address as the default gateway for the hosts that are connected to it.
As I think we covered last time, it actually serves as both a client and a server.
Yes. Now, can anyone answer the question as to why that occurs? Because I'm sick of reading this about 10 times worded differently in the notes as I skim through them. Can anyone answer that?
Well, I don't have a clue. It's a client when it gets its information from the ISP, and then it serves up the information into the internal network. Is that what you're looking for?
That's what I'm looking for. Did that make sense to you, Joe?
Absolutely. I guess that's the near side and far side that you were talking about.
Yep, on the far side of the gadget. 10.4. On the far side of the gadget, it's acting as a DHCP client because it's looking at whatever the IP address and information is given to it by your internet service provider. And it's also acting as a server for your internal and your near side stuff. Okay, we have to start thinking about these addresses as private addresses and internet routable addresses here. Basically, you know, the DHCP server assigns the internal IP addresses that are not the public IP addresses on the far side of the device, and this ensures that the internal IP addresses are not visible on the internet. Welcome to NAT, ladies and gentlemen, Network Address Translation. So when we talk about this in other, I'm not even sure how much it's covered here, but basically with NATing, when a packet comes in, it's translated, the IP address is translated from the public information through to the, given the correct addressing information for the hosts on your internal network. This actually can give you a little bit of added security too, because if some packets come in that aren't requested, like Mr. Virus, the packet might just end up being dropped by the network address translator, bye-bye virus, hopefully. But an addendum to that, of course, is that to make sure you still have your normal firewall, personal firewall, or virus detection or malware detection software installed as per your choice. Okay, these ones that are configured on the near side interface of the internal side of things is usually a Class C private address. This hence the reason why we get these 192.168 type addresses that often get talked about. Okay, internal hosts must be assigned the same. It must be assigned addresses within the same network as the integrated services router. So in other words, they'll have to be on the same segment. We'll talk more about that in advanced subnetting, but they have to be on the same network or network segment. Okay, so the addresses in the range... Jeez, I'm sick of the repetition with these notes. I'm just going to skip ahead with it, I think. Okay, and as I've already said, it also provides the subnet mask and its own IP as the default gateway. God, I mean, how many times do I have to word this in the notes? Okay, many internet service providers, as we've also previously discussed, use DHCP servers to assign IP addresses to your far side interface, which is how you often get, like for example, Jackie's internet connection is a dynamic IP address, which means if she were to disconnect and reconnect to her internet service provider, she would most likely obtain a different IP address. And many of you out there would probably have that. Some ISPs upon request, as mine does. In actual fact, mine does by default now with TPG, just provide a static IP address, which is really good if you want to sort of serve out, run your own mail server and all that tricky sort of stuff we get up to in our spare time. Okay, it's basically going on with more repetition. It acts like a client. Kylie summed this up beautifully before when she said that it acts like a client, because it is a client when you're talking about the DHCP addressing from your internet service provider to your integrated services router. It usually provides an internet routable address, which is what we call it, and I'm not going to read the notes verbatim because it's just repetitive stuff here. Here's where we use the word boundary for the first time. The integrated services router serves as a boundary between the internal network and the external network, or the addresses that are served up by the internet service provider. That is a boundary. Okay, it does say here in the notes there are several ways that a host or situation at home can be connected to the internet. Some of these ways may actually determine whether they're assigned a dynamic IP address or a static one. Gary, do you know whether yours is on your cable network over there in with your surfboard? Do you know whether that's dynamic or static by any chance?
Dynamic.
Yep, so if you had a drop and come back later on, it would be different. Fair enough. But of course, it's always on connection, so you could probably pretty much sort of think the IP address you had yesterday would most likely still be the one you've got today, I guess.
Except those rare occasions that it goes down and you have to wait 6 hours to get it back up.
Six? Yeah, that's not good. Incidentally, Murray, just a quick digression. How are you going with your internet woes on your ADSL that you're having the other week?
It's, I got it back, but it's still not quite, okay, but the ISP says it is.
And what do you think's not okay about it?
Well, on the modem, my power light is lit, but the DSL light is not lit. And they say it's okay because I can still get on the internet. But something's not right because in the beginning when they first reconnected the line, it was lit and now it's not.
So you're not talking on it now by any chance, are you?
Yes.
Well, you're obviously on the net.
Yep.
Well, we usually say when we do our troubleshooting, and this is where we often, with this course, we often think the OSI reference model should be taught a little bit earlier, but that's another thing. It comes next week, guys, for those who are waiting for it. Layer one stuff, check to make sure your lights are on and your cables are connected sort of stuff, and if you go your lights aren't on, you expect that you're not going to get a connection, so that's curious, isn't it?
Not necessarily. The light bulb on the modem could burn out.
Well, I was going to suggest that. Maybe that's all that's happened.
Well, it has individual LEDs, and when I first got the connection back, the lights were lit, but now they're not lit. After 24 hours, they're not lit anymore.
Well, Jackie,
are you on the
right.
connection now? Are you on the connection now?
Yeah, he said he was.
I am now.
So it's obviously working.
Sounds like maybe the LEDs burned out, Mario.
Hmm.
You know, that's the one thing about physical...
I don't know, yeah.
That's the one thing about physical kinds of... Or, you know, relying on LEDs and stuff. I mean, sometimes you have to, but on the other side of the coin, you know, they can burn out too. And so, I mean, if they do, then... You know, I always say, look, rely on the lights, but also ping something, because just because the light isn't on doesn't necessarily mean you're not connected to the internet. The dadgum light could have burned out, and I've seen that happen, and it's annoying, but it happens.
The part that annoys me is if I call into the ISP for troubleshooting, the first thing they're going to ask me is what's the light status on your modem?
Lie.
Lie.
Well, tell them you're blind and you can't damn well see it. Like, it's amazing that, because actually Kylie will probably spin you a few yarns here. Back in April when she rung up her ISP, oh, are the lights on? Are they doing this? And you know, the usual sort of stuff they ask you. Look, I have lied to them before because I think, well, if I tell them it's flashing when it, you know, just because it's too hard to explain to the phone jockey on the other end, basically, that you can't see it and why you can't see it. And in the case of your situation, if you've got what you suspect to be a dud LED, so I'll just quit there. You know you're on the net because you can ping stuff. You can talk to people on Ventrilo. So just tell them it's on and be done with it.
You have to send some of those techies a definition of blind.
Some of those techs, a definition of blind is they start yelling at you more.
Yeah, they seem to think you can't hear.
Trouble is, most of them aren't techs that you deal with on first level these days. They're call centre train people who have a script and they can't go outside that script to save their lives.
No, because they don't know enough to do it.
Yep, that's right. Have you checked your browser settings? The browser's going to do it. I can't get a bloody connection. I seem to remember we were talking about this back in April, weren't we, Kylie, this sort of stuff?
Oh, yes, yeah. It wasn't until I got to level 2 that I actually got some intelligence, and he was quite happy to talk to me, but getting past the doorway demons is the hard bit.
Gatekeepers are doorway demons. Any other questions? I've got, I can segue into something really good here.
I was going to ask about the advantage of having a public static IP address, but you answered that already.
Yes, how do you think I make my mail server work? And serving up ciscovision.org, lonsdalemedia.com.au, etc., etc.
Actually, you know, you can do it with services like DYN DNS and stuff like that, but it's kind of a pain in the anatomy. You know, you have to sign on to their little thing, and it gets your IP, and then it kind of, you know, since it updates it, you can do things like http.abletech.dyn.dns.com or whatever it is, and manage to get it. But it's kind of, it's a little tricky.
It's hairy.
We do it, Elise and I do it with Fidelity phone sometimes when we want to, you know, watch movies.
Yeah, we do it
or
with
something.
Fidelity. Mm. We also do it with Yvonne too.
Where you have to have an IP address. Yeah, we do it with Yvonne's computers too. But so there is a way around not having a static IP. And these things are either free, which DYN DNS is, although they do have a paid version where you don't have to log in every 30 days, otherwise you'll lose your thing. But and that's only like $5 a year. I mean, it's very reasonable. It's like, can you spare it, you know? So, I mean, it's very, or 15, I don't know what it is. But, I mean, it's very reasonable. You can't really go wrong with it. But anyway, you can get it done like this. So just a word to the wise if you need to do it. DYN DNS.
I've used no IP.
And there are other. Yeah, yeah. No IP is enough.
Yep. Or that's what I used to do before we got it even onto D1 DNS. The reason I use it is because she requires a lot of support, and I used to have to get her to get the IP address, and that was always a challenge, so we just gave up in the end and got it in DNS. So it is handy, you know, as Kylie said, you know, people out there like myself and Craig and Will have static IP addresses. In actual fact, that's what happened with Vicky. We remember we said the other week with the gateway, the demilitarized zone. She had her port 80 open, connected directly to her VoIP box, and when she got a static IP address, which our particular ISP hands out if you upgrade to the higher plans, and she upgraded to a higher plan because she wanted to have more download. Unwittingly, she exposed her VoIP box to the big, bad, nasty internet, and we had to go and fix it. So there you go. So, direct connection is the segue I was hoping to come into. And without using an integrated services router, you can get your modem and hook it up to your computer, and that's how we used to do it before we all got ISRs. And that means you've got no network address translation then. You're exposing yourself to the internet. You're assigned an IP address by your internet service provider to that particular computer. And you'd better be careful that you've got yourself a decent personal firewall running.
And then what would happen is that anybody else in the household who wanted to connect to the computer actually had to connect through yours.
Yeah, it used to work somewhat well with Windows 2000, sort of. I never tried it with XP, because by the time I went to XP, I had ISRs.
I had it in my house until a little while ago, actually. I had a just direct modem connecting before I got my ISR.
Yeah, exactly, and I was going to bring you in, Kylie, to say just that. Thank you.
The thing of it is, of course, you know, if you're trying to do something and somebody's connecting through your computer to use the internet, and if they're downloading a big honking, you know, video file, you can well imagine that it could degrade your computer's performance somewhat.
Yes, it's not good. And in this case, the public address of your ISP is assigned to your computer directly. Any questions on that? Okay, connection through an integrated router. When there's more than one host inside your internal network, a la Jackie and her husband, my assortment of computers I have here, Kylie and her sister, we connect the ISP modem or have an integrated services router with a modem built in it, whichever you would prefer, up. And what it then does is lets more than one host see the internet and also allows those hosts to talk to one another. And you hence have this creation of a home or small business network. There you go, pretty easy. The integrated router receives a public IP address from the internet service provider, and the internal hosts receive private addresses from that device, from the integrated services router. You can have a connection through a gateway device, which is really what these are, the integrated services routers. I was sort of mangling the notes up here a bit, but it does actually define, I guess, what some people have and what I'm actually hoping to change to myself. I'm actually hoping just to use a router and then a separate modem when I've got the spare cash to purchase the setup that my friend Craig has, because I think it's going to allow me to do a little bit better with some of the things I want to do here. You can have a modem connected to an internal like router, and then you can have your integrated services devices, often referred to as a gateway device, which I sort of mangled up a bit here because I sort of skipped ahead in notes, which is where you have one black box with a telephone connector on it and some RJ45 connectors, which, as Jackie told us all last year, are like telephone connectors on steroids. And it does basically the same thing, receives public address and serves out as internal stuff, which we've already covered. Okay. Network address translation, here's the bit. Since private addresses are not allowed on the internet, we need to translate private addresses into public addresses to allow the local clients to communicate on the internet. This is called network address translation, or NATing, as I've already said several paragraphs higher. With NAT, a private source IP address is simply translated to a global public address. The process is reversed for incoming packets. So we have a packet coming in from www.cisco.com. It comes in and it's networked or translated back to your private IP address for your local computer for which you're sitting in front of. So these packets have to pass through the gateway. Okay. Whilst each host on the internal system has its unique IP address, these hosts must share the single public internet IP address, which is assigned to your integrated router by your ISP, which we know. I'm going to skip the diagram because I think we've covered it about 20 times in about so many different words. Okay, with all this network address translation going on, it uses a NAT table or a network address translation table to keep track of where packets are destined. Should I try and describe that diagram, Jay?
No, probably not.
Yeah, read your notes, but essentially what it's saying is address, there's a host here on 192.168.1.2. That sends a request to a web server out there on 200.100.75.99, I think is what they're trying to say. But basically, yeah, look at your notes for that. But it's sort of very hard for me to sort of read the notes verbatim. As the packet passes through the gateway, the source address is changed to that of the Linksys external router's interface, in other words, the far side interface, and then is passed on through the network. A web server somewhere on the big bad internet responds to this request because the port is known to be that of... I'm finding this difficult to translate the notes. Any questions at this point?
Is a NAT table part of a routing table, or are they completely separate things?
I'd say they're separate, aren't they?
Well, they're different in that... I mean, the router has to contain them, but it is a separate table other than the routing table.
I would say it is, yeah. Because, I mean, say the routing table has to be concerned with its, you know, connections to other local networks. So, yeah, I know I would stand corrected on that if I'm wrong. What this doesn't go into is that port numbers are also very important, and we know that port 80 is the address for, is the port number used for the example given here, which is the website. And, you know, port 25 is used for the email, for the SMTP part of the email. So I don't believe we cover port numbers too much in this, not so far in the course anyway, do we?
Next chapter.
Oh, I'm glad someone's read ahead.
Okay. Next chapter, Lee.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read chapter 6. Oh, good. Okay, look forward to port numbers because they're really cool things to know about. I knew it was there somewhere because I've, you know, studied all the curriculums and I've studied a couple of curriculums. And I was thinking, where did they put it in this course? So thanks, guys. Okay, Jay, would you like to take us through the summary?
Yeah, hold on a second. Okay, this thing finally decided to unlock. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, without an IP address, a host cannot participate on the internet. And so we talked about the importance of an IP address, its hierarchical structure. And we talked about that an IP address is made up of two parts, the network ID and the host portion. We also told you that it consisted of 32 binary bits, and these are grouped into four 8-bit bytes called octets. Each of these are converted into a decimal number, which is referred to as dotted decimal notation. The subnet mask determines, along with the IP address, of course, which part of the IP address represents the network and which part represents the host. IP addresses can be classified into five classes. Classes A, B, and C are commercial. Class D is multicasting, and class E is experimental. E for experimental, isn't that good? Each class of IP address has its own default subnet mask. IP addresses can also be classified as to whether they're public or whether they're private. Public addresses are unique, and these are the ones that are used on the internet. Private addresses can be used internally by hosts in any organization, and they don't have to be unique, therefore. So, Elise, your number was, your router number is 192.168.1.1, right?
That's where I start, yep.
Yeah. Well, so does my son Sanford. When I was down at his place this past weekend and connected to his network, that was where his router was too. So you can see that these addresses are not unique because they're private and they never see, basically, they never see the light of day or,
exactly.
You know, they never get onto the internet or whatever, however you want to look at that. Private addresses must be translated into what they call internet routable addresses or public IP addresses, basically, in order to communicate on the internet. Basically, there's three forms of communications that we talked about. We talked about unicast, where hosts communicate one-to-one. So, for example, I could ping my husband's computer. Multicast is one-to-many. And these are sometimes used in, like, video conferencing and stuff like that. And broadcast is one to all of them, one to all. IP addresses are assigned either statically or dynamically. If you have a static IP address, then the IP address default gateway and the subnet mask must all be configured manually. So all of that has to be entered in. Usually servers that are accessed via the internet have static IP addresses, We told you how to get around those without one, but it's just easier. Obviously, DHCP is the preferred method of assigning IP addresses in large networks because it reduces the burden on support staff who is already overburdened and underpaid enough. Obviously, we talked about how the integrated services router can act as a client by receiving the DHCP information from the ISP. It can also act as a server by assigning IP addresses to internal computers, etc. Obviously, private addresses need to be translated into a unique public address, and that's network translation, address translation. Routers provide a boundary. We talked about the boundary that separates local networks from the internet. And obviously, the host default gateway is the router interface connected to the local network that's used to communicate with destinations on other networks. When we talked about NAT. One of the things that happens is that the routers keep track of particular port numbers. So that if I'm on surfing the web on port 80 and my husband is looking at the web on on email on port sending email on port 25, then the email port number and the web port number are actually attached to the network communication and sent, you know, back and forth over the router so that, you know, the router can keep track of the what the person was doing on their computer and send it to the right application. We don't want web pages being forwarded to the email server and vice versa. So, all right, I guess we're on the quiz.
Alright, let's do the quiz.
Should we take that, or... Okay.
Well, I don't care. I'm happy either way. It's either that or binary exercises, or we'll go home. What's the consensus? Let's have a look at the quiz. Okay, now this will be a simple yes or no, because there are which three devices... I'll see how it goes reading it. Okay. Which three devices a technician is setting up equipment. Good on him. Which three of the following devices will need IP addresses? Here we go. And you can answer yes or no to this, so everyone got their chat windows open. Here we go. A printer with an Ethernet card, yes or no? We have two answers so far.
Yep.
Yep, there's one from Gary, and that's third. How many people are on channel today? It's only three students anyway, but it looks like Kylie, Mario, Joseph, and Jackie.
It's four
Joseph
of us.
And Gary, there's four of you. All right,
yep,
okay.
There's four.
Okay, the answer for those who said yes, you are correct. A web camera connected directly to a host. Aren't they good? No worries.
No.
Good.
Yep, okay, good. A server with two network interface cards.
Yep.
Yep. An IP phone, that's interesting. An IP phone. Yep. What about a standalone workstation?
No.
No, exactly right. No is the correct answer for standalone workstation. And I've read more than three, damn it, I'm not reading anymore. Which three statements, another yes or no, which three statements are true about binary octets? Choose three. If a bit is zero, its column value is not counted. Yep.
True.
The bit in, yeah, the value of each bit, it's hard to read this one. The value of each bit in an octet is twice that of the bit to its right.
Yeah.
That's actually accurate.
It's actually correct.
Because you go, because you go 2, 4, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. So, yeah.
Yeah, so as you move across the right, every bit is across to the left. I'm going dyslexic here. Each bit is worth twice as much. The rightmost octet has a bit, and the rightmost octet The rightmost bit in an octet has a value of 0 when it is turned on. Interesting.
False.
Correct. No is correct. Oh, false is correct. Okay, a host looks at all the bits in an IP address, and if all the values are set to 1, or all of the bits in the in an octet is set to 1, the value of the octet is then said to be 256. This is true or right? True or correct? Oh, true or false? No, it's actually 255, isn't it? Well done, folks. No. Crazy, these some of these questions. There are 32 32 value bits in an octet. No, there are 32
guys,
bits in an IP
what does
address.
Octet mean? No. What does octet mean? What does the word octet mean?
Eight.
Thank you, Joe. You got it right.
So there are 8 bits in an octet, right?
Yeah. And how many octets in an IP address?
4, so 8 times 4 is 32.
There you go. Well, I don't think I'm going to read the next one because it's going to be too hard for me to read it, guys.
Let me give it a go.
You want to have a try? Okay.
All right. What they're doing here is they're matching the number of the first octet to its class. So, had a first octet of a number of 0, if you had a 0 in the first octet, what class is that going to be? Yep.
All those people answering A, you are correct.
All right. The second one is the octet is 126. What class is that going to be? First octet is 126. Okay. Those who answered A are correct. Your second octet does not, class B does not start until the first octet is 128. Okay.
We might go over that after the quiz.
Okay. The octet has a number of 130. What class is this?
Beautiful.
Excellent. Now, the first octet is 200. What number is this?
People answering C. People answering class C is correct.
Okay, and what about 224? What are we looking at with 224? Actually, it's D because we start off with it goes from 192 to 223, right?
Yep. It's,
all right, and what do we get with
223? Yep.
Yep. What do we get if we have a first octet of 240? That's E. It's experimental, 240, because it goes from 223 to 239 on Class D. Guys, you know what? The only way to do this is to memorize them, just like the only way to do binary conversion is to memorize your powers of 2 for a while. It's really the only way you're going to get the job done.
Okay, question 4. Which statement is true concerning private network addresses? They are always routed on the internet. True or false? Yep, those who said false is correct. They can be used by only one company at a time.
Actually, we only have to pick up one from this one, so...
Actually, we only have to pick up one of these. Yeah, I'll read it properly. How's that? Which statement is true concerning private network addresses? Option A, they are always routed on the internet. They can only be used by one company at a time. They enable web servers to be easily accessed by outside users. They are more secure as they are only visible to the local network though now. I would say D is correct.
Absolutely.
Okay, question 5 is how many Class C networks are reserved for private address space? Option A, 1. Option B, 16. Option 3 is 128, and option D is 256. Okay, those answering D, is that correct?
I don't even know what they're asking on this, if you want
to
know.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that. It's, yeah, I was nearly going to skip it. No, they're asking how many addresses are... How many networks, I think.
Well, and then I would say 256 because it's 192.168.0.0 through 255.
That's exactly right. So. That's what I would have said. It's a tricky question. What is the destination MAC address of a broadcast Ethernet frame? Okay, option A, 255.255.255. Option B is 1.1.1. Option C is AA, 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 and AA. Option D is FF, dash FF, 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 FF. Go now. Everybody answering D, which is all the Fs, is correct. Hang on, what's this next one doing, Joe?
Oh, I can get it. You want me to?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Basically, what the story is here is that they're asking you to match the statement that applies to a particular category. And the two categories that we're dealing with are static address and IP, and dynamic address. Okay, so static IP, dynamic IP. And so the statement is useful for printers and servers. Does that apply to static or dynamic? And if you just press S or D, that would be good. That would tell us. Ooh, you're good.
This is great.
Provides more control of network resources. Well, yeah, in the static, you enter them manually, okay? So if that's what that means by more control, you know, obviously the operator has, you know, the administrator has more control as opposed to the, you know, when the DHCP server is assigning them dynamically. So I guess I would have to say static.
Yeah, it's very, very
possibility device. Of input errors. Possibility of input errors. That's an easy one. Yeah, it would be static, and the reason why is because dynamic addresses are not assigned by an administrator. They're assigned by a computer, so there's not going to be input errors. Whereas if you do assign it by an administrator, there, you know,
you could type
one
in
typo and you've got a problem.
Or you could bring a computer in from somewhere else and it still statically is set to an IP address. You plug it in, you get a IP conflict. I've seen it happen, actually, when I was working for health computing services.
Useful for mobile users. Now, it is dynamic because that way they can just connect in and they're not assigned a static address, which could create conflicts if other mobile users were assigned the same address, etc. So...
Good scenario here is I actually have my desktop computers statically assigned because I like to know where they are. But my laptops, both laptops, are still dynamic, and that is because
you're dropping out.
Oh, I hope not. They could be. Okay. Can I be heard now?
You haven't dropped out this end.
Okay. I wonder what the ping time is doing because I've had a bit of rain here too in the lecture. Basically, what I was trying to say. Yeah, basically what I was trying to say is that my desktop machines are static, my laptop machines are dynamic because they could end up going over to somebody other person's house. That not only could be, you know, that the IP address I've assigned may be taken by some host on their network, but they might even be on a different network segment. Like Jackie's on the 0.1 type segment. So, you know, I'll just be able to, without even having to reconfigure it apart from the wireless stuff which we cover in Chapter 7, I won't have to worry about the IP address. It'll just slip in wherever her DHCP router, a DHCP server, puts me. All right. Okay, my ping time is 52, so let's hope that
it's going to be okay. Here's another one. Limited in time period. A sign for a limited time period. Yeah, it's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dynamic. It's the
address is provided by a server. Draws addresses automatically from a pool. Addresses are not reassigned to other devices. Excellent. Oh, now this is going to be fun.
I know. I was just looking at it myself. The DHCP discover message. Which order do we put these babies in?
Okay. Here's what it is. And remember Kylie's mnemonic last week? This would help. What they're asking you to do is put these in order, okay? And they've given a DHCP request, a discover, an offer, and an acknowledge. And Kylie has her little mnemonic that she gave, remember?
You want to say it, Kylie?
If I do it now, it's probably best to do it after the quiz.
Good point.
Rather than before.
Okay, so put them in order, like it's discovery, offer. Here's the order. It's request, discover, offer, and acknowledge. And you need to put them in the right order, and all you have to say is D for discovery, O for offer, R for A, and R for request, and A for acknowledgement. So those are the things. So which order do these come in?
Silence isn't golden. Perhaps you should tell them, Kylie.
I just typed in the chat D-O-R-A, discover, offer, request, acknowledge.
That's it. Well, we had some dropouts from America, did we? Okay, Jay's been dumped. Okay, we've got some stunts going on here. Okay, welcome back, America.
I have no idea what occurred. All of a sudden I was trying to talk to you guys.
I wonder why I went quiet. So if you wanted to say your mnemonic again, please, Kylie, because Australasia stayed up, but America disappeared for a bit.
Elise, can you hear me?
I can hear you, honey. D-O-R-A is the mnemonic. Can you hear me, Jay? We've got a problem, Houston.
Uh-oh.
Can you hear me, Kylie?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, honey.
I can hear both of you.
Okay, can you hear us now, Jay?
We're fine, Elise.
Okay,
I could hear you when I came up.
We have liftoff. Okay, it's starting to rain here too, which doesn't help, but Kylie said she can hear me, so any packet loss will be... I'm looking at ping times at 53. I think the initially should be getting 33, so let's hope we don't drop out. All right, guys. D-O-R-A is the correct way of putting it, as somebody put in the chat.
Yeah, and it's discover, offer, request, and acknowledgement. What happens is that a discover message is sent out by a client, and the discover message means, I'm looking for a DHCP server now. The DHCP, it's a broadcast message, so the MAC address is all ones, and it's sent to, the 255 address on the network. And the only reply that the client is going to get is from a DHCP server that says, here I am, and I have this particular IP address to offer you. The client gets it back, and he reads the offer of the IP address, and he sends a message back, this time a unicast message, which is the equivalent to, Mother, may I? i.e. a request. And then the server sends back an acknowledgement, i.e. the equivalent of, yes, you may. And the IP address then is accepted. All right?
I think this might be a bit of a test alert, too. It's about which address it goes out on. They're asking you which address it goes out on.
All right.
Everybody clear on that?
Clear.
Cool. Okay, question 9. An ISR, or Integrated Services Router, has a public IP address issued by the Internet Service Provider. What is the purpose of the public IP address? Allows internal hosts to communicate with each other on the local network. That's option A. Option B is allows internal hosts to connect with hosts on the Internet. Option C is allows the ISR to communicate with hosts on the local network. Our option D allows the ISR to communicate with local servers on the network. Interesting answer that. Okay, those, which is all of you answering option B, are correct. Allows internal hosts to connect with other hosts on the outside internet. Okay, last question, which is question 10. What function does NAT, or Network Address Translation, perform in an integrated services router? Option 1. NAT takes the source IP address and translates it to a default gateway address. Option B, NAT takes a local IP address and translates it to a internal source IP address. Option C is NAT takes an internal global IP address and translates it to an external, to a local source IP. I'm having trouble reading this. Okay, and the last option is NAT takes a internal source IP address and translates it to a global public IP. Go now. Option D is the last one I read, and that is correct. Thanks, folks. There's actually question 11 here. I don't know. I don't want to keep doing this. Do we want to do question 11? What is question 11?
Let me do this real quick because it's not hard. I understand. What we have is a router, okay? And so it has two interfaces. Interface B is the public network. Interface B is public. And then interface A is a switch for a local network. And so the question is, what two types of IP addresses should be used on the ISR at interface A and B? And so there's two. And so it says interface A should use a private IP address. Is that true or false?
True.
Now, there's another one. It says interface A should use a public IP address. Well, duh. Is that true or false? Right. Okay. Interface A should use a source IP address. Okay, so now we have another one. Interface B should use a private IP address. Of course. Interface B should use a public IP, and interface B should use a destination IP address. I'm sitting here wondering what that actually means, but
I wasn't paying attention. What was
I'm thinking
one?
That what it means is that, well, it has to be on the public network, so it has to have, you know, a destination address. Because, like, if I say google.com, it has to go through interface B in order to reach that. So, you know, I'm suspecting that that interface will, in fact, contain the destination IP address. If I'm interpreting that question correctly, and I think I am. All right. Does anybody have any questions on this material so far? Any questions at all? All right. Then, how about we do some conversion, some binary conversions? Can anybody, let's take the number 82. Can somebody trace for me the steps of converting 82 to a binary number? Otherwise, I will for you. But can anybody do it?
Would the first thing we do put first six zeros in front of the 82 to make it eight numbers even?
No.
Nope.
We wouldn't need to do that. We would do that for the binary, maybe, but we wouldn't need to do it for the 82.
Okay, our first.
Are there any 128s in 82?
Oh, beautiful. Okay, are there any 128s in 82? Why did you pick 128?
Because it's 2 to the power of 7.
7.
Well, it's a byte boundary. Right? It's a byte boundary.
Right.
Okay, so are there any? Yeah, exactly. It's a byte boundary. So, are there any 128s in 82?
No.
Zero.
All right. So put a zero there for your first number. Now what's the next step, guys?
Are there any 64s and 82? And there is, yes. So we have one in the next column.
All right, so we put a 1.
Column.
And how? What do we do then?
82 Put a 82 minus 64.
Correct, which is, Mario?
18.
My, Mario, how your voice has changed. He's even acquired a Kiwi accent.
I know.
All right, that's good.
So we decided that we're up to 18
and
at the moment.
One. Okay. Do we have any? What's our next step? Do we have any? What in?
Is there a 32 and 18? No. So that's a 0.
No, there's not.
So we can put a 0 on the 32's
good.
Column. Yep.
Okay. So then what?
Is there a 16 and 18? No. So put a 0.
There better be.
I'm sorry. Yes. Yes.
With how many left over?
2.
All right. So then we would go ahead and put a 0 in the 8 and the 4 column, and a 1 in the 2 column, and a 0 in the 1 column, right?
So the number should be 0101000. Note, I put the leading 0 in for convenience, and if you want to line it up with something else, it makes it easier.
I do recommend highly that you put in leading zeros, especially when you're dealing with network. I mean, when you're messing around with these things, you know, it's one thing, but when you're doing network stuff, you really need to put in leading zeros so that they line up properly. All right, now I'm going to give you something else. Let's convert 320. I'm converting 320. So, ladies and gentlemen, how do I do that?
Is there 128 in 320? Yes.
Stop, Mario, because you're actually going to have to go beyond the 128 boundary. You're going to have to start going 256 to 512. Okay? Look, the truth of the matter is that normally, generally speaking, when you're dealing with networking in terms of IP addresses and subnet masks and stuff like that, you're only going to be dealing with byte values, and so you will be asking the questions that Mario is asking, i.e., is there a 128? But at this point, because we have 320, we have to understand that, you know, what we have to really ask is, what is the greatest...
What's the
number
greatest power?
That is a power of 2 that can go into 320. And obviously, we've got 256.
256, which is 2 to the power of 8.
Correct. And we take 256 from 320, which leaves us, what, 64?
Correct.
Okay, so, is there, what's the next power of 2? We've done... 256, what's the next power of 2 that we're looking for?
128.
Yeah, exactly. Half of it, guys. Okay, if I did 256, then divide it in half. Okay? Just divide it in half. Now, is there a 128 in 320 after we took the 256?
Yes. No.
Yep.
No.
Sorry.
Of course not. Because we already took 256 from 320 and we got 64, right?
So
okay. Let's go over these steps again. The first thing we did was we have the number 320. We have to determine the power of 2, the greatest number with the power of 2 that go into 320. And so I looked at 128 and it obviously goes, but it's going to go like 2 times. Well, we can't have the number 2. It's too much. So we say, okay, what's the next power 2? Well, it's 256. So you say, okay, there's 1 in the 256 column. And then we're going to have to subtract 320 from 256. And I did this in my head, so I could be wrong, but I get 64. And I believe that to be correct.
Yep.
That is correct.
So if I have 64, then the truth of the matter is that if I look at 128, then obviously I cannot have a 128. So I put a zero there. So right now I've got the numbers 10. Well, the next thing I have is 64. Do I have a 64 or not?
Yep.
Cool. I do.
So we put a 1 in
so
the
I put 64? A 1 there. And do I have any other remaining numbers?
Not.
Big fat zilch the rest of them.
So right. The rest of the columns are all zeros. So I have 101 and the remaining.
And zero, another 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0 and 0.
Okay. Does everybody understand how I did that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mario, how are we doing?
I'm not quite clear on that. Could you,
I could.
This is where a pegboard would help, and unfortunately we can't give them out because of customs. They may often later would.
I could help. Our number is 320, right, Mario?
Right.
Okay. So your question about being 128 was a good one, except for one problem. There would be two 128s, right? Because 128 into 320 is going to go a little bit over two times. Would you agree with that?
Exactly.
So here's the problem. We can't have two in binary. So that tells us that we need to go another power of 2, okay? And the way that we do that is we multiply 128 by 2, and we get 256. Is that clear?
Right.
Okay, good. So we put 1 in the 256 column, okay? Or 1 is the furthest to the left, okay? So now what's the next power after 256? We're going to the right now. What's the next power of 2 to the right of 256?
227.
Yep.
Yeah, which is what?
128, and that's a 0.
That's a 0, mm-hmm. Because there are no 128s, okay? Again, one of the things that you can do to determine that is that I say 256, you know that I have 256, I can divide it in half and come up with 128. Now I can divide 128 in half again and come up with what?
64.
Is there a 64 here? Do we have a 64?
Yes.
Okay, so what do? We put a 1 there, right?
1, and then the rest are zeros.
Exactly. Is it clearer now?
Okay, what messed me up was that you said put a 1 in the 256 column, and that sort of threw me off.
Does it make sense now?
In other words, you just put a 1 in front, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. You find the nearest power to the number that you start with, and the nearest power, I think Jackie said, was 320 was the number she started with, or whatever it was. The nearest power that's going to work within that will be 256. Because going the other way to the power of 9 is 512, so we can't fit that into 320. So we have to look for the next smallest number, which is 256, and we start from there. We put our 1 in that column.
Okay. One more question. If you had 321, it would still come out to be the same thing.
It would be 10100001.
Right. Okay.
I believe. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So the difference would be only the rightmost number would be a 1. Is that clear enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Does everybody understand this concept?
Yes.
All right, let's do another one. Let's do 429. I'm just doing these numbers out of the air, actually. Let's do 429.
And we're outside our 8 byte boundary now too, folks.
Okay, guys, so what are we doing here? 429
minus 256.
Okay, so here we go. What is going to be our first power that we're going to use? What is going to be our first power of 2 that we can use? What you're going to do is you're going to actually, maybe it would help if I explained it this way. Find the power of 2 that is too big to use, and then divide that in half. So, for example, I know that I have to have at least 256 in 429, but can I have 512 in 429?
No.
Of course not.
No, you can't. And unfortunately, Joe's disappeared.
Negative. You can't have 512 in 429. So put a 1 there, which will represent 256, right? And subtract 429 from 256. Does everybody understand why?
Oh, 256 from 429.
Right.
Which is equal to 173 if you can't be bothered adding it up in your head. 173, if that's what I said.
Does everybody understand how I'm getting this?
Yes.
So we have the number 173 now.
Okay, so what's the next question? What power of 2 are we looking for?
128.
Yep.
Is there a 128 and 173?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So put a 1 there, right? Now, subtract 128 from 173, and you get what, guys?
45.
Okay.
I assume that's right.
It looks right. So is there a 64?
No.
So we'll put a 0 in the 64's column?
Yeah. Precisely. Now, is there a 32?
Yes.
Yes.
So what do we do?
What do we do?
Stick a 1 in the 32.
Subtract 32.
We stick a 1 there and we subtract 32. That's correct. And what do we have left?
13.
Beautiful. So is there anything in the 16's column?
0.
And what do we put in the 8 column?
1.
1.
And what about the 4 column?
1.
1.
And what about the 2 column?
0.
Exactly. Otherwise you'll have 14. And what about the 1 column?
1.
Exactly. Is this hard, guys?
Very good.
That's fun.
Should I read out the number?
10-4.
1-1-0-1-0-1-1-0-1.
Is this making sense to you, folks?
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's kind of fun, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
Does anyone... I'm just wondering if we should pop a little question here. Why do we sort of, like, need to know the binary?
Yeah, go for it.
Anyone got some ideas?
Because the computer itself deals in binary.
Yeah, that's one answer. It's one thing. Yeah, there's a couple more answers too if anyone's to throw them at me.
How do you determine which part is a network portion and which part is a host portion when you're dealing with an IP and a subnet mask? What do you do?
We got to use binaries and subtract, look, line those numbers up and end them.
That's exactly right. So you have to be able to convert, you know, to binary. All right. Now, I've given you some numbers that are actually harder than the kind of byte numbers that you're going to actually, the byte values that you're going to be working with most of the time. And you guys are doing it, okay? So, you know what? I'm not worried about you folks. You guys are doing well. And I'm proud of y'all. And you know what? It's not even 3:30 yet, but I think we can let them go.
I think they understand this. I don't see a need to keep them any longer.
I agree. I think we're over the hump. We're over all that, you know, chapter 3, 2-week chapter and the hard stuff, and we're over the chapter 5, 2-week chapter and hard stuff, and I think everyone's come through here with flying colours, and you ought to give yourselves a big pat on the back because you bloody well deserve it.
Question, after we end the binary numbers, do we convert back to decimal form?
Well, you do. I mean, but you've already been given the decimal equivalents to begin with, so that's not going to be too terribly difficult, right?
Right. No, I was just asking if we do it, go backwards.
Yeah.
No, go back to decimal.
Yeah, we do. And does anybody need any help doing that?
This is a fun bit.
Just adding the powers.
Yep, you get your binary
pretty
number.
Much.
You get your binary number and you look at all the columns that have got ones in them, you add up the powers that have got ones in them, and you forget the ones that have zeros in them, and you add them up, and that number that you've added up is your decimal number.
Just make sure you know what powers you're dealing with, that's all. And really, if you need to, put leading zeros in front of them. You know, I always advise that, because they don't line up otherwise, so put leading zeros, count, and make sure you've got 8 bits there. It's really...
Are we ever going to go into hexadecimal numbers?
You know what? Hexadecimal is really easy. For every 4 binary numbers, okay, it's 1 hexadecimal number. Okay? And the hexadecimal numbers are 0 through 9 and A through F. So, for example, if I have 1111, that is equal to F or 15. That's 4 binary digits are 1 hexadecimal number. And that's how you do it. It's really pretty easy. I mean, you just go lopping them off by 4s, folks. Does that make any sense, Murray, or do you need for me to do something? Do you need for me to do a number?
No, that makes sense.
Okay. For example, if I have 245, okay, let's just say I have 245, right? I have a 128. I don't have a 64 because, I do. Sorry. I have a 128. I have a 64, so that's 192. Then I look and I have a 32, right, which is going to be 224. So I go 111, and I also have a 16, right, which is going to give me 240. So I have a 1111, and then a 0 in the 8, and a 1 in the 4, and a 0 in the 2, and a 1 in the 1. Is that right?
Sounds good for me.
Hold on a second, guys. I'm making sure that I have this right, and then I'm going to go over this with you. Just hold up a bit. All right, at this point, I have 1111. 0101. Okay? 1111 0101. Alright? Okay, so 1111 is my first 4 bytes, and I know that that is 15, which equals the letter F. So I'm gonna say F is my first byte. Now, my next byte is 0101, and that is basically, if you look at it from the perspective of, you know, a binary number, what you have is, you have a 0 in the 8 column, you have a 1 in the 4 column, you have a 0 in the 2 column and a 1 in the 1 column, right? So that would come out to 5, if you guys would agree with that. And so I would just say that my number is F5. Would anybody agree with that or disagree with that?
Mm-hmm. Are we still going?
Now, the way that you can check this is
my first column is F, or 15. Now, in hexadecimal notation, okay, the powers are no longer 2, they're 16, right? So my number is F, and my power is 16, because it's in the second columns, all right? I have 1s, I have 16, I have 256, because 16 times 16 is 256, and I start going up from there. But my second column is F, so that's 15 times 16. If you multiply that out, that is 240, right? And so in the ones column, what we have is 5. So I add 240 and 5, and I get my number 245. Does everybody understand how to work that out? Hello.
Okay, someone following this? It's not really covered in the curriculum, but it's interesting to know.
Did you have a question, Joe?
No, it's I think I like working with the binary to decimal binary better than the 16 powers.
Well, they're a little bit hairier, yeah, but if you just look at it from the viewpoint that for every 4 binary numbers, you have 1 decimal number, I mean 1 hexadecimal number, all you have to memorize then is you convert, you know, the binary numbers between 1 and, you know, 15, because that's all you can have. You know, you've got a half a byte there, so you can have 0 to 15. That's all you can have, okay? So you convert those numbers, and then you have your hex digit. I mean, it's
okay,
not that terribly difficult. Yeah. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes. You got away with math, Jackie. That's all I got to say.
Actually, I suck at math. But I can't explain it. You get me into algebra and calculus and stuff, and I suck. That's why I never went into engineering. I had actually thought about it, but my calculus was so bad that I just couldn't do it, so thought I'd become a doctor instead. What are you going to do?
Which was also a good profession.
Any other questions, guys?
I'm clear. Thanks, Jackie. Thanks a lot.